You are listening to Jaya Ashmore. You can find hundreds of meditations and talks on my websites, jayaashmore.org, jayaashmore.org, as well as opendharma.org, opendharma.org. All the recordings are offered in the tradition of generosity or dana, and your gifts are welcome. Thank you for listening. Would anyone like to ask or share something?
It's always felt too much to really explore complex kind of outwards. And feeling that I quite often am restful about it, it feels a deep sense of shame. And I'm sinking when I try to speak about the anger and the shit. and then parade them around as a family in the shape, which is quite fun. But then it actually was a gown I really enjoyed wearing. So that was a nice heartening induction for me that started. And the subject matter still remains one of life's what life delivers, it doesn't deliver, is it, it's how it is. It's important to be done about it. So that was a sweet release.
It's lovely to think of the castle of emptiness and Queen Hetty. There's many ways that what you've said ties into what I have in my notes, so we'll let that flow. Any notes? So sinking in a way that you said is so nice, is that what you're saying? You're saying sinking in a way that was so nice, is that what you said? I'm not sure if I heard the last words. Like that sinking off the grid. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. We have, it's like we looked for the operating instructions and we picked up some piece of paper that said something about being special. And we keep trying. And it's so uncomfortable to keep trying. And it's one of those things maybe that we could sort of feel our way towards a moment of our dying and feel like what of any form of specialness would matter. But it's hard to give up. It's also just a funny, very tiny little thing that happened is then I went to the notice board to write Iris a note, and there she was just signing a note to me, and so. Not a big tangle. Anyone else?
Yes. Also, it's not the quiet thing in this group. Something happened in the kitchen today. We were doing dishwashing after dinner was finished. And I was looking for a thing that I've been missed the other day also, the thing to do, a cloth thing to do and wash the things. And I turned to Katarina because we looked for it another day, and she said something about this. And when she said that, it was a totally different story. She said something that may help her anyway. It went straight in and was this part of, I'm not sure if you were saying or something like that. It was this part of, I totally broke together and started to cry. And she said, can I come over and hold you? And I said, don't excuse and say, oh, I'm sorry or something. No, I'm not doing that. She said, because I think it probably was to happen. Yes, I said it was to happen. And then she came over and held me. And a little bit later, we just were standing there. And then I said, we have no idea what the part of you were in. You have such a big, huge story that you were a part of now without knowing it. It is this interconnection things that it's just sometimes you just see it like this.
Mm.
And it's just great.
Sometimes even the conscious thinking mind can get a glimpse of what reality is made of. A metaphor of us came to my mind yesterday and today, of being us in a little boat, maybe a kayak. And maybe the boat is even big, but it looks so small compared to the vast sea. And we're paddling, paddling, paddling. Maybe we're good at paddling, maybe we're not good at paddling, but we're really trying our best to paddle, or whatever the proper word for a kayak, probably some other word. And it's so easy to take that as the world, me and my paddling, and maybe we get better at orienting by the stars, and maybe we get better at the angle of the stroke or whatever. And then the so many currents, the so many layers of currents underneath, going west, going east, going south, going north. Going down. And so in our conversation about meditation and life, where you might have noticed by now that we're more trying to taste and do and learn that way rather than by explanation. So bringing about some implicit knowing instead of explicit. If the paddling is sort of me thinking about me, basically. Me thinking about me. And in a way, maybe it's a good thing that it somehow encourages us to go on, get out there. Though our paddling is not doing much. And gives us some way of staying connected to keep staying with something. And we find out that it's not keep staying with constantly full power effort into me thinking about me. We also find that things in our life before the boat start to be more relevant. So things that we thought were not meditation start to, we realize it's relevant. And if meditation practice, so we start with some tools, some techniques, and some what to do when and how to, just so that we'll get in the boat. And the boat knows how to float on the water. And when the disappointment in the technique comes, let it be just that. Not disappointment in yourself or life. Let it be even post-disappointment, like, oh, the role of the technique is to get me in the boat. The boat is floating. Not sure what the paddle's for yet. Not sure what the place of thinking and emotion is yet. And gradually we develop some more trust. So gradually, like an infant. At first, no words. And gradually, all of that occupation gets less. There's less investment in occupying ourselves. With like that vast horizon. And occupying less, occupying less, occupying less, occupying less. Something moves. So doing less and less and less, stopping more and more and more, it doesn't come to an end. We actually only then get moments of beginning. We have some taste or glimpse in the conscious thinking mind of what we are, a mountain of space. That seems to dress up in some place and time and gender and name. In the poem from yesterday, the Gungata Kepata Kolare, the opening of Dupatta, in some versions, the Dupatta opens. And in some versions, you open it. And in no version that I've seen is it clear if the beloved is behind the veil or in front of that person in the veil. What's who's covered? and who is uncovered. And so Hetty gave us a lovely example of an uncovering, like very, very gently, because the shame can be so overpowering. But finding a way that there could be uncovering without or with less shame. We have a curious kind of collective maybe responsibility to really look into what's happening about privacy and exposure. Mostly so that we start to feel like giving more privacy where allows this kind of unveiling without shame. It's very delicate and very potent. So I think it has a lot to do with boundaries. And a lot of us who would come, who would bother to come and do nothing for a week. Not everyone, but many of us, there might be some sort of facility with sort of disappearing into the boundless somehow or other. And there may be, often there's a bit less or experience. There's a bit less experience. About personal boundary and interpersonal interface. There's often more complication there. We feel less clear. And so gradually the moments of meeting, whether it's a sound of a bell or a bird or wind in the trees or rain, or whether it's the feet barefoot in the grass, or in the singing, or in seeing, or in, it's available anywhere. Gradually, we grow to find that soft spot where we feel it, being the meeting and being met. And gradually, we grow courage with more privacy than more unveiling, more meeting, so slowly. Does it make sense?
Say more privacy, do you mean physical?
It's different for everyone. Maybe an introvert needs literally to be alone, and an extrovert maybe literally needs to be privately in a conversation with someone or at a private party or in a rock concert or.
So you're just basically saying it's about sensing the extent of privacy we need at any moment for something to unfold. Is that what you mean?
It's extent and quality and way, and it's at the same time we can feel shame is some indication about feeling somehow that exposure is dangerous and that there's a misconnection or disconnection. We've lost track of the everybody-ness of tears or shakiness or. So understandably, we lost track. I don't mean to say in any other way. And in fact, that sort of It's interesting how easily our human sensitivity gets met as maybe insanity, even so easily. At least problematic, but often insanity. So even, I mean, many, many different, very specific things, including where there's some impact. And the wholesome response to that impact, when there isn't community, when there isn't someone there asking, could I hug you? Can we be part of that interconnectedness, embodiment thing? Or can I be that quiet presence that doesn't move, whatever? If we could feel the intelligence of that, the response of shock, there's an impact that's felt as an impact. Hatred, neglect, violence, whatever, of word, thought, or deed. We're sensitive. And this is kind of horrifyingly and so curiously, intriguingly, been like starting to dawn into human consciousness for some decades now. That so much mental illness is a response to trauma, or is trauma a response. So like Freud, working with these women in Vienna and slowly realizing that they were victims of sexual abuse or survivors. And he didn't dare. Also, we probably wouldn't have ever heard his name had he dared to say what he saw, losing his clientele. So the recovery of the windy way, how to listen to how our sensitivity responds, and that it's really much more of a sanity. Than the insanity of ignoring. So it's not to say that I think every mental illness is always necessarily a product of abuse. But so many people that I know, it's hard to think of someone who's had a mental illness label that I know the trauma that happened before. The illness. If we can call it that. Some cross the pass of love. Some don't. Feeling what is inside love in you and in your life. So, for example, just so simple, intuition, our best guess, and listening. And then some attention to the boundaries. Some attention to the boundaries. But noticing when our occupation is there at the surface in the nervous system. And really noticing the way, the particular way or ways that you're in jail. You can start to feel there's that person here in the room that intimidates you. Or that you feel you need to protect yourself from, you need space from, or whatever. And you could start by feeling the response in the body, your response in your body, right? And slowly that's more clear and more clear and more clear that it's my response in my body. Maybe to that type. Maybe just, who knows what current. And then we could start to gradually have more and more from inside love. Not from looking at myself from outside where I would say I shouldn't be bothered by this after all these hours, days, months, or years of meditation. Or when there's such good intentions, why should I have a reaction? We're so much deeper than our little sense of that little project that would just be done with my paddling, with me thinking about me. And we could start to even feel sometimes like which quadrant is this system, the programming, like on guard? Left, right, front, back, lower, high, lower, higher. And just feeling that sort of cage in the flesh. In the nervous system. So understandably expecting some kind of whatever attack, neglect, invasion, not being seen, wanting to be seen, not being seen. So feeling that, feeling the complication in the body and energy. And continually coming back inside love to what's already inside love. And feeling the harshness and dryness and dryingness of those that don't pass. They don't cross the pass of love. They don't cross the path of love often because being fraught at the surface, at the boundary, at the interface. Trying to use harshness as a way or force as a way to get in. Out of insecurity, paddling fiercely. And that very harshness denies us because we're so sensitive. It's not a match. Sensitivity just will find any way but really letting harshness in. And in a way that's also can be as a blessing can be as a Zen master, that we're only allowed in, respecting the sensitivity, working with shame. And then we're in the palace of ripening transparency, spaciousness. One more couplet of the poem. Ghat ghat me to saim basat hai. Ghat is, again, if you've been to India, then you may have seen, now they're mostly plastic, these round jars with a lip at the top for now mostly carrying water. They used to be used for many things, storing grains as well. And if you could feel your way back through imagination that when they were made by hand and thigh out of clay, full of handprints and the river mud. Ghat ghat me, he repeats ghat twice. So it's to say, it's like saying in pots and pots, in every pot, in every vessel. But it's that kind of vessel, and he uses this word in so many of the songs. It's not just once. It's one of his words. Like his way of talking about remembering, he uses a different word, but remembering the calling, like tuning to an instrument, remembering a calling. So in ghat ghat, in the vessel and the vessel and the vessel, in every round vessel. Yesterday I spoke about that sense of completeness, but that's also open. It's such a great metaphor, ghat. In vessel after vessel after vessel, in all these roundnesses that are complete and open-ended. So in every cell of every being, in every cycle of every ecosystem, of every planet, of every universe. Sai basatahe. Truth resides. Truth is Queen Hati. In every open-ended, complete, round cell, community, cosmos. Sai basatahe. It's truth with the feeling of a kind of, it's clean, uncomplicated. It goes well with sensitivity. And it's so lovely that then the next line, the second line of the couplet is, Katu bachana matabolare. Please don't speak harshly to any. There's not like a, it's just to any gut, to any cell, to any community, to any person, including inside. And someone asked by note, saying she was pleased and surprised that I would talk about body and body image in the Dharma Hall, which is in a way so tragic that that's unusual. But. And the question is like, please say more. And so this image of the round clay vessel with its opening and its emptiness, you know, its space, its capacity. As maybe a metaphor that we can sort of feel our way into. Feeling, though, maybe also memories or moments where you feel the body whole, even a little bit, and you feel that that wholeness is not a closing off. And that even is confusing to us because we expect either privacy or exposure. And this is coming into wholeness, protection, some of safety in that wholeness, and yet it's open. It's absolutely made to be, it's made to be a space that has an opening. So in any moment, any perception, we can let it have its wholeness. One of the Christian mystics, maybe Meister Eckhart, talks about allowing each sound and taste and color, each everything, to be a circle that's like each one completed by God. Each one, whole, but not a stopping point. So playing with sensing the wholeness of the body and allowing ourselves to bear the openness that that brings about. And another way is when you feel an openness, and that openness brings about a feeling of wholeness, which is a bit, I think, what Hetty was describing. In her openness to her feelings, and then an unwillingness to take it as a broken thing and let it. I'm going to tell one more story briefly. And we'll continue all of this, if all goes well, tomorrow. A Zen teacher tells this story in the time of the European conquest of the Indian nations in North America. And it was one of those travesty moments of signing the document where the Indian people were didn't really have another choice than to sign away their life, their wholeness of community, of people and creatures and land, for some piece of paper, basically. And it was a winter day. And it was in a really cold part of the land, of that continent. Snowy, windy. It's the Arctic wind comes down. At the appointed hour there, the two groups, the groups of Native Americans and the groups of Europeans, came. With the paper to sign. The Indians just had one skin, one animal skin across their back, and something here. The rest was open. The Europeans came well equipped, as we would think of it, with only this part, only the face. And as it can happen when this sort of huge tectonic kind of collective movement is happening, where this sort of conquest of the continent was going on, So the person in charge from the European side was able to see something there. And somehow, with maybe sign language, maybe a translator, kind of like, what? Aren't you cold? And just that uprightness that you described, Hetty. So tall, nearly naked, in what was now formerly home. Formerly home. Pointing to the European's face. Face is open for you. Here, all is face. With us, it's all face. Coming into our wholeness and finding openness, we lose track of that drive for specialness, which is also a drive of hiding. Hiding what we think is missing or wrong or too weak to fully participate. Thank you for listening and participating and for the privilege of being with you.